Welcome back to this second hour of Leading Edge Medicine. Leading Edge Medicine provides only general medical information. Since everyone's individual situation is unique, you should consult your own physician before taking any action related to your personal health. All content of this program is intended for general informational purposes only. Good morning and welcome to Leading Edge Medicine with Dr. Jerry Mixon and Dr. Samira Umat. Leading Edge Medicine is sponsored by Longevity Medical Clinics and is devoted to helping you feel and function better tomorrow than you do today by providing the newest and most advanced medical care designed to improve both your body and your brain. Leading Edge Medicine will keep you informed regarding the very latest developments in science and medicine while highlighting some of the Northwest's most prominent physicians, all while helping you separate the science from the silly and the facts from the fiction. This is live call-in radio at its very best, giving you the opportunity to participate in the show. Now, here are your hosts for Leading Edge Medicine, Dr. Jerry Mixon and Dr. Samira Umat, along with their co-host, Lynette Morgan.
Edge Medicine, I'm Lynette here, along with Dr. Jerry Mixon and our special guest doctor in the studio, Dr. Michael Gilbert. We're talking about the eyes today, if you have an eye question.
Dr. Umat is off in India.
She is in India.
A few more days, so I think she's going to be home about Wednesday or Thursday, so we're looking forward to getting her back in the harness.
That's right. Although, Dr. Gilbert, you did a good job of the Bella Medica
referral
there. Thank you so much for that. All right, we've got more eye questions. We're headed to Federal Way. John is on the line. Hi, John.
Hello,
welcome.
John. Good morning.
Good morning, doctors. I'm a patient of Dr. Gilbert, as well as Dr. Mixon, Dr. Mixon for over 20 years. And my wife and I have enjoyed the greatest medical care I can conceive, I feel that I'm as good a shape as I've ever been, or perhaps even better now. The reason I called in, I want to also mention the great clinic you have in Tacoma. They're all like family, and that's really a great feeling.
We're going to be rebuilding a bigger, fancier facility down in Tacoma, too. So by next fall, we will change the address and we'll have a much brand new, much nicer facility built out for you. So,
is it going to be close by?
We sincerely hope so. We're looking for space now. But, we've just outgrown the space in that clinic. So we need a bigger spot.
Well, you have a great staff there.
Mm-hmm. Yes, we're going to keep the staff. We're just going to give them better buildings to work in.
There you go. Okay. Get more staff.
All right. The reason I called Dr. Gilbert was talking about the floaters in the eye and the new procedure for replacing the vitreous fluid.
Yes.
And I had a vacuum cleaner type session done about 15 years ago. I had about a dozen floaters in each eye, and they went in with this miniature vacuum cleaner. I was under anesthesia for about an hour, I think, and that was pretty successful 15 years ago. Now, occasionally I get another floater back in each eye, and it's a little distracting. But what is your thoughts about the new procedure compared with what I had done?
I suspect it was an earlier form of the exact same procedure. The advantage today is the technique and technology have improved, so the statistical risk is less, but it's still significant risk. So if you just have a few new floaters, I'd say live with that nuisance as opposed to accepting what still is significant risk to have that removed. But the next generation of that technology is the vitrectomy that I was talking about. So it's essentially a similar treatment that's done with smaller instruments. Although I would have never called it a vacuum cleaner, but it's. But I'm going to accept that thinking. Because I think the concept is reasonable. You're sucking it out, but you're doing. I think it's a fluid exchange. Essentially, you're removing the cloudy and putting in the new.
the new technology at that time was just coming in, was a smaller form of that same instrument. But the doctor didn't use that because he said it with so many floaters, it takes longer because it has a smaller opening. So
it makes sense that they've compensated for that now with that evolving technology. Yeah. So over 15 years, of course, those technologies continue to improve. Nonetheless, as much as there's incremental decrease in the risk has not gone to zero. So I think you have to do that risk-benefit analysis as with any surgery. And so I would say if you've got a lot that bothers you all the time, it's probably worth the risk. I think if it's occasional, drifts by, it's a nuisance. But probably doesn't rise to the point of taking significant risk to reduce it.
And from what I'm hearing him say, it seems to be an occasional issue. So, you know.
Yeah. I would put up with that. If it increases, which is unlikely, if it increases, then I think the justification changes.
Yeah. I'm with you and Dr. Mixon. It doesn't bother me that much. And I don't want to go through the procedures again, since I have one in each eye. And it's kind of like a bird flies by every once in a while. I just want to pass that on.
The thing about complications and adverse effects, even if it's only one in 100,000 people, if it happens to you, it's 100% for you.
100%. That's right. And so, likely lifelong.
Yes. And right. And then you're stuck with it forever. And so you've taken a risk once and it worked and you didn't have a complication. I would be hesitant to take that risk a second time
for much lower yield.
Yes.
Right.
Well, absolutely. And I want to thank you very much for being there for me and my wife over those many years. And
you're welcome,
she was also.
This is I love doing.
Mm-hmm.
Getting to come to work every day and getting to take care of people like you is what makes my life worthwhile, and I appreciate it.
You're very special to us. We all love you.
Thank you, sir.
Aww. John, how wonderful is that? Very, very sweet. I feel like a lot of your longevity patients feel like that. Once they've come into the clinic and they have met the staff, they love them. They are treated like family, and that is a wonderful thing to hear, but we love hearing it, so thank you.
You got to remember, I'm an old-fashioned, reformed family doctor.
Yes. So. We need more of you, Dr. Mixon. And you know what? If you've heard that John and his wife were patients of not only longevity for many years, but also of Dr. Michael Gilbert.
Yep.
And, you know, we talk on the show, and we have so many callers that call in and say, yes, I've been a patient for so many years, and I feel so much better. And if you were one that is going, you know what, maybe I should give them a call. Yes is the answer. Mm-hmm. We would love to have you come in, meet our staff, the family. They're going to take good care of you. You're going to get more than 5 minutes of interaction with the doctor. You're going to come in on that free health analysis appointment, find out, get your blood tests drawn, and then also do the in-body, which lets the doctors know. And Dr. Mixon, maybe you could tell us a little bit more about what that in-body does with the water and the muscles.
Yeah. Well, the in-body basically is measuring the ratio between muscle and fat in all four extremities as well as in your torso. And it's also looking at intracellular versus extracellular water. And those things will tell us a whole lot about what your risks for dementia and diabetes and degenerative joint disease and cardiovascular disease are for decades up the future. So, you know, if we see that you are headed on a high-risk track, then we're going to want you to go ahead and do the big panel of laboratory work, which will then give us far more granular detail as to what the future holds for you. And then our doctor will sit down and spend an hour going over your lab, going over your history, going over your goals and desires, and come up with the outline of a plan, what it's going to take to get you where you want to go.
Then, absolutely.
Then you have a choice to make. You either want to become a patient and let us help you fix it, or you can decide to continue sliding downhill. And I don't understand people who want to get slower, fatter, weaker, dumber, and sexless over time. But there are such people.
But it's a choice.
It's their life. Mm-hmm. And I'm not their daddy and I'm not their boss. We offer them opportunities and they make the decisions.
Absolutely. And if you'd like to make that decision, we encourage you to go ahead and give us a call. We would love to get you on the schedule for that free health analysis appointment. Here is that number. It's 866-86-YOUNG. That's 866-86-YOUNG. You can also go to our website, which is lmclinic.com. That's lmclinic.com. All right. And we would love to see you here and become part of our family. We have three clinics for you, Tacoma, Kirkland, and in Linwood. So lots of places for you to go and a big schedule so you can find a day and a time that works best for you. All right. We're going to take some more phone calls here for the doctors. This time headed to Seattle. We have Kay on the line. Welcome to the show, Kay. This is Leading Edge Medicine.
Hello, Kay. How can we help?
Hello?
Yes, ma'am.
Hi there.
Are
you
there?
I'm here. Yes.
Okay. This is for Dr. Gilbert, I think. I had cataract surgery back in 2019. And then in February of this year, they did some scar tissue removal on one eye. And so since then, when I'm stopped at a stoplight, I feel like everything's moving, but if my eyes kind of rotate and my head turns, then it's okay. Is that, I'm assuming that's something with my eyes, but I don't know. Is that too weird that you've never heard of? And it's only when I'm stopped at the stop sign. Otherwise, I'm fine.
Hmm. Do you wear glasses at all?
No. Well, I still have to use glasses to read, but so other than, you know, just that, minor.
So I think you ought to ought to bring this to your ophthalmologist, and there are some measurements that can be done. It may be.
So it probably does have something to do with the surgery?
No, ma'am. I don't think that at all. I think the likelihood of that approaches zero. What you described, and I don't call it scar tissue, but there is a membrane behind the implant. Normal anatomy, it's supposed to be there. 40% of patients who have cataract surgery, that membrane...
Can you talk a little louder? I'm having a hard time hearing you.
Can you hear me now?
Much better, yes.
Okay. So 40% of patients who have any cataract surgery will have some gradual clouding of that natural membrane that's behind the implant. It's not scar tissue. In fact, it's just epithelial tissue that are migrating across, but it changes the clarity. So the great news is 30 years ago, we had to do a second surgery for that. Today, it's a simple laser. And that laser makes an optical opening in that area, completely restores the optical path, does no distortion to it. So the likelihood of that laser, that treatment to restore the clear optics, having anything to cause the motion detection that you have, I think approaches zero. I think any change now to your vision like that is coincident. It sounds like you need to have someone check your vision and your prescription to see if one of the muscles of, there are 12 muscles, 6 in each eye, that control your ability to see depth perception, where your eyes are looking at one any particular time. If one of those muscles, either from just age, sometimes subtle changes can happen, or diabetes, high blood pressure. There are many conditions that can affect one muscle asymmetrically to the others. So one isn't quite pulling its weight, in which case, in certain settings, especially with fatigue, so that would be when you're driving, when you're driving at night, but associated with fatigue, you could have just a little bit of asymmetry in one of those muscles and causing some difficulty holding the world together when you're at that stop sign. In which case, oftentimes, an adjustment to some night driving glasses would help that situation. But I think having them assess what's happening, they should be able to duplicate that in the lane. where they do the exam.
And that would create
I think the likelihood that that your laser surgery had anything to do with that is extremely small.
Except for the fact that it was a surgery.
But and that muscle right, imbalance that would create that motion sometimes. That I feel when I'm stopped at a stop sign.
I say that, I'm sorry. Say it again.
I said it, so that movement that I feel when I'm stopped at a stop sign, that might have something to do with the muscle imbalance of the eye. Is that what you're saying?
It would be one of the things that I would ask them to check.
Gotcha.
Because that makes much more sense. Nothing is likely to happen related to that laser surgery in that setting. I think in, you know, that one, less than 1% possibility, they should be able to tell that in an exam. But okay. If so, you know, if when you have that situation go on, close each eye independently. Now, you're at a stop sign. Otherwise, I wouldn't ask you to do it while you're driving.
Right.
But as soon as you come to a full stop and you're having that sensation, close one eye, close the other, and see if the problem is just when both eyes are open. And if it goes away when you close one eye, one the other. Because if that's true, then that little test will suggest that it's the muscle imbalance having nothing whatsoever to do with the laser. Make sense?
Yes. Thank you so much. I appreciate
My
it.
My pleasure.
You're welcome.
Aw, thank you for the call, Kay. A break here, and then we will be back. We're going to talk more about floaters. How about that? And lens replacement and even hormone treatment. So a lot of topics coming up today on Leading Edge Medicine. You stay right where you are. We're going to take a quick break, and we'll be back. Talking about that it is a three-day holiday for some,
yep.
Taking the day off on Monday. So there you go. All right, we are ready for some more phone calls. How about you, doctors?
Absolutely.
Ready. Let's do it to it.
Yes.
Woo!
Okay, we are headed to Renton. We have Buck on the line. Welcome to the show. This is Leading Edge Medicine, Buck.
Buck.
Okay, thank you, Annette. Good morning, Dr. Gilbert. And
good morning,
sir. I had the name Buck for a while.
I had a question for Dr. Gilbert.
Was this your given name?
Well, my son was the first one that called in this morning, Chris. He was one of your patients.
Oh, my.
Prompted me
to
call you.
you should be very proud. He's quite a gentleman.
Oh, he is. He's a great, great son. I'm a patient of yours. You had checked my eyes earlier in the year, and you found I had a slight cataracts in my left eye.
Yes.
And that I needed a replacement. Well, within a week after seeing you, I didn't get back to you because I was diagnosed with stage 4 renal cell carcinoma that metastasized over to my left adrenal gland.
Oh, no.
And I had a 6-hour surgery here on August the 26th that removed my right kidney and my left adrenal gland and a couple of lymph nodes. And I wanted to find out from you, do I need to wait for a while for my body to heal up before I come in for a lens replacement? And I, too, like one of your patients had called, I was on, they gave me Flomax in the hospital for 30 days, and then I also take Tadalafil.
Okay. The Tadalafil has no impact on the iris of the eye, whereas, as I mentioned earlier, Tamsulosin and that class of drug absolutely does, quite permanent, and used to be very surprising to me, but we just have learned to live with it and understand it. So having been on it for a month, it likely has some impact, but if that's only 30 days, it should not be a major issue. You want to let us know that in the medical record, so we've got, but you'll be asked that. So answer to your main question is, fortunately, the eye works independently of the kidney enough that you can choose to do that surgery whenever you choose. The impact on your kidneys approaches zero as well. because the process is so local to the eye. We do it under local anesthesia, not general. So there's no impact on your systemic healing, and the systemic healing is not likely to have any influence on your result or recovery from the eye surgery. So I think you get to choose. Good news.
Okay, now, should I make an appointment with you to have my eyes re-examined prior to surgery?
It's been long enough. There can be changes. So we would want you to come in and have us take a look again and to take a look and make sure, quite independent of your kidney surgery and carcinoma issue and treatment. We want to make sure that, say, for instance, any chemotherapy that you had hasn't affected other systems. While it doesn't affect the cataract and the retina, usually isn't affected by chemotherapy, the tear system
often is. Well, I didn't have any chemotherapy. The type of cancer that I have, only 5% of the people have, and there really isn't any other treatment that I know of other than surgery. So.
Okay. Well, we hope that's totally under control, but it should not influence your ability or your timing for having successful implant surgery.
Oh, okay. Then I'll go ahead and call the office for an appointment.
Great.
Okay. Well, thank you. Now I have a question for Dr. Mixon.
All right. Next.
Yeah. How can I help?
Well, Dr. Mixon, since I only have one kidney and one adrenal gland, would I be a good candidate for hormone replacement therapy?
Yes. We would be able to, you know, we'd have to adjust your levels a bit because you'll metabolize them a little differently. But, no real impediment there.
Oh, okay. Okay, then I guess I'll contact Longevity also.
Why not?
Very good.
See what we can do.
Get it all cleaned up.
That's right.
Yeah, okay. Well, thank you both so much for your answers, and really enjoy your program. Oh, and one other thing I wanted to ask Dr. Bill Gilbert is, I'm taking Relief Factor. Do I need to get off of that prior to a surgery?
No, I heartily endorse it. I take it myself. And in fact, I have patients who, you know, I tend to encourage omega-3s because of their impact on the meibomian gland tear system. And Relief Factor has a high quality omega-3. So we factor, I hate to say the word, we factor that into our recommendations in a total omega-3 dose to help those glands. So no, absolutely not. We just need to know how much you're taking, and sometimes I'll augment beyond the omega-3s in that, depending on the condition of the meibomian glands. But I think it's good stuff, and use it myself.
Well, I take 2 packs a day. I've been doing it for years.
Great.
All right.
Okay, thank you both so much. I love your program, and thanks again.
Yeah, you're welcome.
Our pleasure.
You know, actually, there's some recent papers on 3 of the 4 ingredients in Relief Factor, all that improve mood, make people more cheerful and optimistic.
Well, we're pretty happy folk.
I think we are.
I think we are. But I was just contemplating here, you know, here's a gentleman with a stage 4 renal cancer.
Yeah.
He sounds pretty optimistic about
his
future, et cetera. And, you know, I hope that the Relief Factor has
having some impact.
Yeah, has some encouragement in that direction.
That's good. Not a bad side effect, if you could call it. Or just
effects,
a plus.
That's the way to go.
There you go. Yes. Okay, we hear the music. We will take a quick break, and we'll be back with more Leading Edge Medicine. I'm Lynette here with Dr. Michael Gilbert and Dr. Jerry Mixon. Here's that number to get through today. We've got room for some more phone calls. 206-421-5757. That's 206-421-5757. We'll be right back. Stay right there.
Yes.
We're back. We don't have any dancing queens here.
Nope.
Dr. Umat is in India.
Although it sounds like fun.
Yes. Well, I said, would you go out and find us?
Is that
some
an option? Can I
find us some dancing queens?
Right.
Okay, I'll see what I can do.
Actually, I prefer they not be drag queens.
It depends on what direction we're going with that. That could go dark.
That's
for me.
Right. Yes. No, I was, not on the dance team. Okay, we're back. Leading Edge Medicine here. I'm Lynette with Dr. Jerry Mixon and Dr. Michael Gilbert. And more phone calls. So let's get to them. Let's go to John in Maple Valley. Boy, we've had a lot of Johns today.
That's good morning, John.
Yeah, that's the popular name.
Hello, John number six.
Welcome, John.
Good morning. You guys are part of our Saturday mornings. And I have a question, an eye question. First of all, I'm 80. I have type 2 diabetes.
Okay.
Sometimes I have what has been called optical migraines. And it's where I can look at somebody and their face is just gray, but everything around them is fine. And the first time I had this was like over 20 years ago. And I haven't had them for a while, but last week or the week before, I had 3 days in the afternoon where I had this that lasted for about 20 minutes. My two eye doctors that I've had, both of them said that the optical migraine is nothing to worry about. And it doesn't happen very often at all. So that's one concern I had. The other one is I get tired eyes very quickly if I'm on the computer or reading a book, and it seems like I get more floaters, and I have to blink quite a bit, and I finally have to just give it up. And that'll last anywhere from 20 to 45 minutes. And the last thing that is the most strange is that because of my diabetes, I have to get up and use the bathroom 2 or 3 times a night. And when I look at the fixtures like the toilet, the sink, the bathtub, which are porcelain or white, there are thousands of cracks in them. And that's what I see. And the light is kind of low. I don't turn the bright lights on, but I look at it and those fixtures have thousands of cracks, and I'm like, if it did fall apart, it would just be a tiny bunch of pieces. And that is so strange. I don't know what causes that, but it doesn't seem like it during the day. And colored surfaces, I don't see that. But if it's plain white at night with low light when I get up to go to the bathroom, there's just thousands of cracks in these fixtures, and I don't know what's causing that.
Okay, so I should have been taking notes because we've got this long list of very different things to discuss. First was the presumed ocular migraines. So when you have those episodes, have you paid attention? Is it one eye, the other, or both at the same time? Or sometimes it varies?
I guess that's one thing I haven't done is close one
eye.
Pay
attention to that. If it's a single eye that happens, and it only is a single eye, certainly, if it's just the central vision, it doesn't have. There are other things that can cause that, though ocular migraine would be very high on that list. If it's happening both eyes at the same time, now we're certain. That's almost diagnostic. That's got to be a central brain phenomena, not one coming from the eye. Okay, so that's the only thing. If there are shimmering lights, a waviness to the vision. Then those are much more characteristic, much more common visual phenomena of an ocular migraine.
I have had on my left eye, way, way over to the side, I can see a little bit of the lights. And I know that one of my eye doctors said, if you get that in the center, it's really concerning and you need to get in right away because it could be a tear in the, I forget what he called it, but I usually don't see those, kind of shiny lights when I have these optical migraines.
If
but I did
shimmering
have the last
lights,
one.
That's a much more common visual phenomena. And just because you have the shimmering lights in the center, that is not necessarily diagnostic of a retina problem. In fact, it's more, very common that it's peripheral, but the classic visual migraine that was when it was first published, the visual phenomena associated in the migraine syndrome was a central called a fortification scotoma, where you get jagged lines that looks like a fort if you're flying over a fort, jagged lines that shimmer and either spiral in or spiral out. And that was the classic one, and that was central. But I find in my long practice that peripheral shimmering lights is much more common. Though, you know, I have seen myself, I have a rare optical phenomena where I have something that just is very small and drifts through my vision centrally. So it's not uncommon to have this as a minor phenomena. I think if it happened more frequently or if it's unilateral, then it's worth doing some checking to make sure it's not vascular. But with the shimmering lights in the periphery associated with it, we're right back to, it sounds like optical migraine phenomena.
The one that that perplexes me is the fragmentation on white porcelain.
Yeah.
I've never heard of that before. Have you?
So let's leap forward, let me get back to the computer. Don't let me skip that, because I think that probably affects more people than getting up in the middle of the night and seeing fractured porcelain. So, while I would, the first thing that goes through my mind is I have no idea. But as I think about it, someone who has some floaters, what can happen, the floaters tend to settle out by gravity. When you sleep, if you have, I hate sentences that include the words at your age. But at your age,
I don't mind.
at your age, the vitreous gel in which those floaters live becomes more liquid. It's just a normal part of aging of the eye. In youth, that's a fixed gel, doesn't move. You don't have floaters because nothing's floating. Nothing's moving through that gel. But just as Jell-O goes from liquid to gel, the vitreous goes from gel to a liquid, and that's why we get more floating. As you have floaters, those people who do have floaters, oftentimes they will, by gravity, settle out. But then when you're sleeping, you have changed where gravity brings those floaters. So because of the lack of viscosity of that vitreous gel, they're more mobile now. So, and in sleep, some people will notice this phenomena when they wake up in the morning. They look up at the ceiling and they see their floaters, but during the day, they tend to see them less. Now, that's partly complexity of the visual information coming in. The brain filters out, though. But it's when you look at a white ceiling or white porcelain that you're going to see, or a clear blue sky, that you're going to see your floaters better. So it's partly that phenomenon. You're looking at the porcelain, so you're going to see what floaters are there all of the time more. But one of the reasons you might see more there than you do looking at that porcelain during the day is because of the horizontal positioning while you sleep. Some floaters are going to find themselves redistributed, and they're going to be more visible when you get up at night rather than when you've been when you've been vertical all day watching the computer.
Now, on the floaters, would they be more prevalent when your eye is tired, reading a lot or on the computer? Because
I think is happening there. The fatigue factor is, it's not so common that your eye becomes truly tired. What's happening is it becomes less and less comfortable and less visually clear, because as your eye dries out, the quality of your vision degrades and the comfort of your eyes decreases. And we articulate that. We say, my eyes are tired. But what happens is the glands that keep your eye hydrated for the clarity of your vision and your comfort release those tears only when you blink. Normal blink rate is 20 times every minute. On the computer, it goes as low as 2. So we stare at the computer, and after you've been on for a while, you're having that degradation of the clarity of your vision and fluctuations of the both the quality and the comfort. So how do you address that? Well, you can put in artificial tears, but the much better thing is if you understand what's causing it, the cause of it, it is to make sure that you're not staring at the computer screen. If you do that, then you're reading, your computer, any of those intermediate tasks can greatly, you can work hour after hour instead of working for that shorter period of time and finding that your eyes are uncomfortable not recovering for 45 minutes.
Okay.
When we come back, maybe we can talk about what we can do to rejuvenate those glands so they're not so fragile, because you didn't have this problem when you were 20 or 30.
Correct.
But over time, over decades of doing those tasks, reading at length, working on the computer, there's some permanent damage and some reparable damage that are done to those glands. So maybe we can
talk
about
that. Now, would
that
be the same with books?
I'm sorry?
Okay, when I'm reading a book, it seems a little different. A computer screen and a book are two different things.
Correct.
And are you saying that the computer screen is worse for this condition or?
Slightly.
The book. Okay.
Screen time. Okay. But screen time is so prevalent, many people read on tablets, on their cell phones. So screen time is a little bit worse than text, but not much. Many people can only read for a half hour and their vision fades, and it's because they stop blinking when they're reading something interesting.
Okay.
But the real problem is both the frequency of blinking and the degradation of the gland function. Fortunately, we have some new technologies now that we've adopted, we've integrated just this year to help bring back those glands.
Yep, so we're going to talk about that. In just a moment. So
just
stay right there. Okay, John.
2 minutes. We'll be right back.
Thank you.
Right there, John. We'll talk about that. And Judy and Catherine, we're going to try to get to your calls as well. You're listening to Leading Edge Medicine. Here comes the break. We'll be back in just a moment.
On the road again. Just can't wait to get on the road again. Life I love is making music with my friends, and I can't wait to get on the road again. On the road again.
All right, we're back.
Yes, back. Sir. With more Leading Edge Medicine and the doctors. Okay.
What was that last question?
The last question was talking about the floaters. John had.
What about?
Yeah, and John, you wanted to talk more with Dr. Gilbert?
Yes, and the question I have, well, first of all, it sounds like whether we read a book or use a computer, that if I take more breaks, that
it's
would be
about
helpful.
The same. Breaks won't help. Blinking will.
Okay.
If your glands are working, then simply reintegrating blinking into your workflow. So for instance, you don't want to be thinking about blinking, but when you sit down to read, maybe every page turn, you make a point of blinking so it becomes automatic. Or some people who have more advanced problems with this, every paragraph, you just automatically have yourself blink. Pretty soon it becomes subconscious and the problem goes away. If that isn't doing it, John, then the problem is the responsiveness of those glands to the tears. If you do this, if you have this habit for long enough, there's permanent damage to those glands. But fortunately, we have some technologies. That technology has been evolving. We keep on the cutting edge of that, partly because I have this problem. So I always want the cutting edge treatment. But the latest generations of treatments include treatments to improve the quality of the tears and the quantity of the tears that are generated with your natural blink, which makes much more sense than putting in drops. Drops can help, but they last about 5 minutes. If we can get your natural system working, you can read hour after hour, no drops, just blink. Make sense?
Okay, blinking does help, and it's automatic. When it starts to get more difficult to read, then I do blink, and that does help. So
what you don't want to do is wait until it gets dry and try and blink your way out of the hole, because that will shorten both your functional reading ability and also the longevity of it. What you want to do is reintegrate blinking into your workflow so you don't notice it. Make it subconscious to increase the frequency.
Okay. Okay, and then
if
the
that
last
isn't
thing
working
I still have
enough, then it just means we have to do some of those treatments to get those glands working again. Easily done. Glad to help with that.
Oh, okay, great. And then just the last thing I wanted to make sure of what's going on are the cracks in the porcelain.
So when you see the cracks, the next time I want you to try this. When you see the cracks on the porcelain, roll your eyes a little bit. If the cracks move even the slightest bit, then it suggests it's exactly what I described. And it is nothing, you know, unless the cracks are increasing in number over time, suddenly increasing, then I think you need to get it checked out. If they aren't increasing, okay, but they do move a little bit when you're, you know, looking at that porcelain in the middle of the night, then I would consider highest likelihood it's some floaters, and not worry about it.
Yep. Yeah, these do not move at all, and it just seems like a little light after I get up and go into the bathroom. But when I look at it and stare at it or move my eyes a little bit, they do not move at all.
So if they shift around and come back to the same position, that's what I would expect. But if they move at all, then it's floaters. If they don't, then I think doing an eye exam, a visual field, would be a very reasonable thing to check and make sure all the wiring is normal.
Okay. Yeah. Because of my diabetes, I do see my eye doctor once a year. And for the last 3 years, my prescription has not changed enough.
It wouldn't be your prescription. Prescription would have nothing to do with the cracks.
Okay.
So I think some further testing would be worthwhile if you're sure they don't move. My bet is you've got some floaters that do move. But if not, then I think some further testing, especially some neurovisual testing, would be indicated.
Okay. Well, I really appreciate your information. Just one last question. Do blue blocking glasses help at all with computers?
Okay. Latest study by the American Academy of Ophthalmology said that they have no medical benefit to the eye. So if you feel good, they do no harm. But the likelihood that they either are better for the eye or help in some way is low.
Okay, so don't bother with that then.
I wouldn't. Wouldn't.
Okay. Well, again, I won't take any more of your time, and I sincerely appreciate all the information. It's been very helpful. Right.
Thank you, sir.
Oh, thank you, John.
Now, we've only got about...
And we've got one call left.
4 minutes to go.
There you go.
Let's get her in here.
Catherine from Bellevue on the line. Welcome, Catherine.
Hello, Catherine.
Hi, Catherine.
Hello. Dr. Gilbert, you've been a patient, or I've been a patient of yours for a year and a half about.
Okay.
And I've had dry eyes for about 40 years. Worked up for Sjogren's many times, I think, over the years. And the blood tests don't come back, but I have a high ANA. So I'm wondering, is there a rare disorder that affects your eyes and affects, and I have all the symptoms. You know, I have the tiredness periodically. I have the dry eyes. I have, you know, all the dry mouth, all that. Is there something in the brain that could oversee that I could have an autoimmune? Excuse me.
I think whether it's an autoimmune source or not is of interest from your systemic health, but it's not critical to your ocular health. The one way we would differentiate whether this is the major problem or a contributing problem is there's something called a Schirmer's test. The Schirmer's test, when done...
You've done that on me.
Okay.
Yeah.
So do you remember the result?
Yeah.
I'd have to see it.
Not right offhand,
all
but
right.
You've filled
so
the bottom.
That will tell us whether the lacrimal gland, which is the problem with Sjogren's, if the lacrimal gland is the primary problem. If it is, then sure, you can go down the Sjogren's pathway, but it turns out whether or not you have the Sjogren's diagnosis doesn't influence how we help the eye. We have
one class
of drug that can improve the tears that are produced by the lacrimal gland, whether it's healthy or not healthy, and it isn't very effective. So what we're left with is going to the other gland system, which is the meibomian gland system, which can respond to treatments. So most of the treatments that we have are directed toward that gland system only because we're not very good. Well, it's really two reasons. Number one, the meibomian gland system is the primary gland system for your vision and your comfort and dry eyes. 90% of patients, multiple studies have shown approximately 90% of patients who have dry eye symptoms. It's because of a failure of the meibomian gland system, not the lacrimal gland. And if Sjogren's issue is an underlying problem, it just says that the lacrimal gland is failing. It's not the whole cause of your dry eyes, because some lacrimal gland failure can be overwhelmed by healthier meibomian glands, and that's the primary system. So likely what's happening is it is a failure of both, and I'd have to see what that Schirmer's test is to know which, you know, which is the most critical. But even if you have Sjogren's and a failure of the lacrimal gland, the number one cause for your dryness symptoms is still likely treating the meibomian gland systems. And fortunately, we do have some effective treatments. We don't have anything that brings back the dead glands. So if you have some gland,
Can I interrupt for just a second?
Pardon?
Could I interrupt for just a second,
you
please?
May. Whatever you like.
So I've gone through all the treatments. Didn't you hear
Tell
I
have
been a patient for a year and a half?
Are.
Well, I've been a patient for a year and a half, and it's amazing. I can see now. I can even see without glasses.
God bless.
I was, okay. Well, I mean, just for
so
a short period of time.
So you've had
then,
all
I
the
stopped.
Treatments. We do IPL, radio frequency, LipiFlow. There are multiple treatments, and I guarantee you haven't had them all. Not that you need them all, but
well,
I think if
you're... Well, my point is I don't need them. They're working. That is
oh,
not
great.
The problem.
If it's working...
Then you've done it. Yay, yeah. Team.
Yeah, don't fix it.
So I'm so glad you commented.
Well, I'm just... Why would it... Correcting it, even though I'm told that I need cataract surgery, and I'm told that I need, you know, prescription glasses, and then it intermittently it fixes it, and, you know, I've taken the isopropyl, whatever that medicine, the prednisone medicine you give for your eyes, and I need that periodically, but then it just seems like for some reason my body attacks it again.
If you're happy, then we're in good shape. If there's fluctuation, that's inherently a part of the dry eye syndrome, and that just means sometimes we have to do, you know, almost certainly there is a maintenance component of those technologies we have used.
Yes,
they don't last forever.
And I'm so sorry, Catherine, you'll need to call back sooner than next week because we have to leave. Right now, we have literally 5 seconds left of our show. Thank you for listening. So many great calls. If you didn't get through today, try us next week. We're here from 10 to noon every Saturday. Have a great rest of your weekend.